And we knew that there'd be some here who had heard of computer ethics but didn't know anything about it, and then there would be others here who are experts in computer ethics. So what we decided is to have a variety of experiences, the first of which is some of the people who are responsible for many of the developments in computer ethics over the last couple of decades will talk on a panel about the nature of computer ethics, what's going on in computer ethics at the moment, and what the future of computer ethics looks like from this vantage point. Then during the rest of the conference, you'll have various computer ethics presentations by speakers in the various streams of the conference. And then finally, we also will have a luminary presentation from a guest speaker, our keynote speaker on computer ethics, which will happen tomorrow. The way today's panel will work is each of the speakers will talk for 10 or 12 minutes, and then we'll open the floor for discussion. So the first hour or so will be individual presentations by the speakers. We'll start with John Weckert from Charles Sturt University in Wagga Wagga, Australia. John will be our keynote speaker tomorrow, and I'll have more to say about him tomorrow, but I won't say any more at the moment. Herman Devani from Revere College in New Hampshire has published many things in the last few years providing a broad overview of what's going on in computer ethics, what the publications are, et cetera, what the conferences are, and what the organizations are that are involved in computer ethics, and so on. Herman has a piece in the latest issue of the APA newsletter on philosophy and computers, edited by John Norvolo, who is here with us. There's a new section just starting in that newsletter. It's the section on computers and ethics, edited by Douglas Birch. And if you read this introductory section on computer ethics along with this conference, I think you'll have a pretty good view of the nature of computer ethics and what's going on. Deborah Johnson's book in computer ethics in many ways set the agenda for computer ethics for more than a decade, and she has been our guide and our instructor, and has also provided a number of ideas around which we can rally and do research and so on. Jim Moore's piece, What is Computer Ethics?, wasn't his first piece of computer ethics. He wrote others, including a very important one on whether there are decisions that computers should or should not make, which was published in 1979. Okay, we'll start with John Weckert's presentation.
Thanks, Terry. Okay, well, I'm going to give some sort of overview of where I think computer ethics is. I guess I'm obviously going to be talking about the situation as I see it in Australia to a large extent. I'll say just a little bit about the future of computer ethics, given that that's supposed to be what this panel about is about. One of the beauties about talking about that is that none of us know what we're talking about. So in a sense, it doesn't matter too much what we say. There are a couple of general things, though, that I want to say about the future of computer ethics. I find it difficult to distinguish between what I think will happen and what I think ought to happen, or what I hope will happen. If you think that at some stages I'm talking about what I hope will happen, I may well have got confused. But it's not easy to keep those apart. Now, just a couple of things about sort of the big picture with computer ethics. Do I think that there will be anything really new in ethics? I think no. I'm not sure what that would be if there was such a thing. Do I think there will be new problems? I think that's undoubtedly the case, new problems that computer ethicists will have to look at. I think there is going to have to be a lot more relationship or connection in the future too between what computer ethicists are doing now and what's going on in particularly areas like field of mind and probably metaphysics and perhaps epistemology. At the moment, I think, and I'm as much to blame as other people, probably more in some cases, we're not taking a lot of notice at the moment, I think, of what's happening in these other areas. And I think when it comes to developments in AI, if we don't do that, we won't be doing many or anything useful in that area. I also think that if we're talking about computer ethics and the future of it, we need to make at least perhaps a superficial distinction, but a preliminary distinction between computer ethics for philosophers, the sorts of things that most of us talk about here, and computer ethics for people, for computing professionals. Now, there should be a strong overlap and a strong interaction there, but I think there are certain issues that concern us as philosophers that don't immediately concern people who are out there writing programs or developing internet sites or things like that. Perhaps they should concern them, but perhaps they don't as much as we would like. Now, what I'm going to talk about now is perhaps slightly more mundane issues of what I think computer ethics is looking at now, at least in Australia, and where I think some of the moves will be in the future. Now, to a large extent, computer ethics is driven by current needs, and I think that has to be the case with any applied ethics. You have to do some prediction, but you have to be also very aware of what's happening at the moment, or what we're doing won't be relevant. To the extent that we can predict what's going to happen, that's great, but often we can't. Now, there are a number of areas where I think there'll have to be a lot more work. It's probably the same in the States. It certainly is in Australia the case that there is stuff on privacy in almost every paper that we buy, every decent newspaper. Now, the thing that I think, and that's not new, that's happening now, I think the problems are getting worse, but one of the areas that I think we're going to have to do more work on is this whole area of data mining, which undoubtedly is an area that is great fun in lots of ways, but I think it's a fairly worrying area in that it's finding all sorts of associations which may well be in the public domain already, but most of the time we don't know them, and by and large don't care. When we know lots of associations, and then we forget about them, and I think one of the things we're forgetting is the value we're forgetting. The problem with computers is that once something is there, it's there for a long time, and it's easy to drag out. In everyday life, we see things, we know things that happen, but then other things take over and we forget, so there's no really bad effects from it. But I think with data mining, there can be a big problem. Another issue with privacy, which is following the same issue here as I just mentioned, there's a site that's been set up recently in Australia called CrimeNet, which basically puts people's criminal records on the net, makes them fairly readily accessible. These two first quotes here, or these two bits of quotes from the website where it's justifying its existence and saying that everything that's on the website is in the public domain anyway. We're only making it easier for you to find out whether your neighbour's a criminal or whatever. Now, I mean, okay, that's true, all of this stuff's accessible already, but I think there's a big difference between having stuff accessible but moderately difficult to get at, and putting it somewhere in a form where it's enticing, right? It's easy to get at and people want to get at it. Now, it seems to me that this is a big worry, and we need to try and work out guidelines in that area. Now, another area where I think there is a worry, there was a recent incident in Australia with Telstra, which is our biggest telecommunications company, where it was a famous case at home anyway about monitoring employees, and it raised the whole question of employee monitoring. Obviously, a lot of people think it doesn't matter. Other people are very concerned about it. we don't have time to go into it at the moment, but it seems to me that this is another area where we do need to look at carefully. We need to look carefully at what rights an employee has or loses when they enter the workplace. Right? I don't think that we've got that right yet. I think that with the modern, or with the ease of monitoring now, we're making it too easy for too much to be monitored. I think the question of responsibility is going to become much more important. We've talked in the past about the responsibility of software developers, software engineers and so on. That's important, I'm not saying it's not. I think this lovebug virus the other month raised some interesting issues. Now, it caused a lot of harm, and we obviously all blame the hackers and said they are responsible for doing it, or the people who set up the virus and spread it. But there was also a little bit of criticism of one particular software company for making software readily available to us all and making it fairly easy to hack into. Now you might say, well, it's not their fault. But imagine the situation if an airline didn't take much care about security and you're on a plane and terrorists got on. Okay, the main blame is with the terrorists, but there's still some responsibility there on the airline to take reasonable precautions. And I think that at least a case can be made that software companies have got the same sort of responsibility to make sure that the software they sell isn't too easily able to be hacked into. One of the issues, all of these issues seem to have come up at home relatively recently, the whole issue of equity and the human-computer interface. In the New Scientist a month or two back, there was an article about someone who was blind saying how unfair it was that he couldn't get onto the New Scientist site. In a paper, more or less at the same time, there was also an article about the unfairness in the website of Encyclopedia Britannica in that it wasn't accessible to the blind. And just at the time I was leaving home the other day, there was news of SOCOG, which is the Sydney Organising Committee for the Olympic Games, being sued because their website wasn't accessible to the blind. So this whole question of equity in the human-computer interface is undoubtedly going to become more important as the internet becomes more important. If it's not used by many people, it doesn't matter too much if there's no real equity. If it is an essential tool to be used by most people, then of course the equity issue is a big one. Some other areas that I think are important. I think there'll have to be a lot more work done on search engines and fairness, particularly now that it's possible to pay to get your sites coming up earlier, at least on some search engines. Global ethics is undoubtedly going to be an ever-increasing issue, partly for the equity thing. And taking account of the various cultures. The internet at the moment is dominated by English, it's dominated by Western culture, and that is a problem for lots of other people, as we're finding out from our students and so on, who come from various countries. I think we'll have to look very carefully at how we want computer technology to be used, what we want to be developed in the future. Question of regulation of the internet has raised its head at home and here in recent times, and I think that's not going to go away in the near future either. Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, our next speaker is Herman Tavani from Revere College.
Just the thing, but anyway, thank you. I'd like to do two things, look at some current perspectives and some future projections. I'll begin with just a brief discussion about some current perspectives. As Terry mentioned, there's a recent article in which I do discuss this in more detail, but I will briefly, in a very kind of cursory way, just talk about a few current perspectives as a kind of a backdrop for discussion about some future issues as well. And if you look at the literature, you'll probably find that the debate involves a number of issues, three of which would be whether CE issues are unique, what the proper methodology should be, and what the impact of globalization and the internet have been for computer ethics. Okay. One question is, are these issues unique or even special? There are two schools of thought. Some argue that there's just nothing new at all. I mean, it's just the same as before. And these give rise to certain what he calls policy vacuums, which also create certain kinds of conceptual muddles. And it's not just we can just easily formulate new policies or revise old ones until we clarify some of the conceptual muddle. In terms of methodology, I think that Jim's model has become kind of a standard for many of us in computer ethics. First, identify the policy vacuums, clarify some of the conceptual confusion surrounding them, formulate new policies or revise existing ones, as the case may be, and then to justify those policies usually via some kind of ethical theory application. And the question then becomes, well, can we apply ethical theories to issues in computing? Some argue it's no big deal, we just simply take the standard theories and apply them. Others have argued that learning, for example, is that they strain the resources needed to devise new theories. Jeroen van den Hoven has come up with a solution to this. Jim Moore has recently suggested some possible theories that might address those issues. In terms of the future, in terms of globalization and the internet, what impact has that had for computer ethics? For example, has the internet itself introduced any new ethical issues? Some people are of the opinion that that the internet itself has introduced these new issues that didn't exist in the pre-internet era. I tend to agree with Deborah Johnson's view on this. I think she puts it well. Is look at the technology itself. It makes possible anonymity. It makes possible replication of information on the medium and the global interactive scope. But it hasn't necessarily introduced any new moral issues. It makes there's a moral difference in terms of the kind of behavior from offline versus online. But there's no evidence to suggest that there are any new issues of interest just because of the internet per se. Some have suggested we may need a separate field of internet ethics or cyber ethics or something like that. Again, I disagree with that, but there are those who hold that view. With regard to the changing aspect of the global aspect of computing, some say, well, we need a new name for the field. Computer ethics doesn't quite make sense anymore. And for example, Terry and Senator Rogerson have suggested something called global information ethics. Jeroen van den Hoven and others have said it should be called ICT, information communications technology. That would be a way of better capturing where the field is now. But anyway, I sort of just use that as kind of a backdrop to where I want to go, but of the future of computer ethics. And to do that, I just try to look at some of the different developmental phases of computing itself, implications for ethics, and thought about what those might be. If we go back to what I call phase one, the 50s and 60s, we have these standalone computers, these large mainframes, unconnected. And they begin to raise some questions, issues about responsibility, AI, rational decision making with machines, Jim Moore's articles to that effect. And I think you also have some concerns now about the storage of large amounts of information in government databases. But it doesn't really become an interesting field to really take off, I think, until the 70s and 80s, when we have what I call privately owned network computers. And what this does is brings about the merging of local area networks and wide area networks in both the public and private sectors. You merge mainframes, mini computers, micro computers, et cetera. And we see a number of issues starting to emerge now around privacy, information being exchanged across these lines. both in the commercial sphere and government sphere as well. Issues involving computer crime, using networks to hack into systems, to manipulate information, to steal money, and so on and so forth. And then some issues with the emergence of PCs, copying software, and so on and so forth. This is out of order. Technical assistance. This is going to have to wing this. So the third phase, the fourth phase that I was talking about was what I see as a kind of convergence, the convergence of different kinds of technologies. In the past, we had the metaphor of a computer, keyboard, mouse, screen, but now we have Palm Pilots, digital telephones, et cetera, et cetera. And there seems to be a kind of a new phase of technology which is different from the previous. And of course, there's been convergence on other phases too. For example, in phase two, we have the convergence of telephone lines and computers, but the dominant theme here happens to be the computer as a machine with the internet and the web. We switch now to a kind of a medium metaphor, but we also have the keyboard and the screen. And then finally, with this phase four, if you like, this new convergence, we have a picture where computer technology becomes embedded. It could be biotechnologies, it could be digital telephony, and so on and so forth. So it's more difficult to distinguish what these pieces are and what the role of computer ethics is. And because of this change in technology, some might argue that computer ethics itself might disappear, might go away. In fact, Deborah, in her recent paper in Ethics Comp 9, argued that computer ethics may and perhaps should disappear. And she gives some sophisticated arguments for this in terms of instrumentation of action and the fact that we have a certain presumed background condition in the past where computers weren't present, but now they become the background condition. Before computers were over there, now they're part of how we interact. And she makes a somewhat convincing case for why computer ethics may go away. I guess there are two questions here. Will it go away? Should it go away? And I don't know the answer, quite frankly, whether it will go away. I think Deborah's thesis is very convincing when it comes to issues like privacy, property, and so forth, because they become the presumed background condition. They are part of just how we interact. With respect to professional ethics, for example, I think computing professionals will still want to have an area called computer ethics. And for philosophers, certainly work in AI, electronic agents, and so on and so forth, I think there will still be plenty of work for computer ethicists. So, even though the technology is becoming embedded, as Deborah would point out, and it might seem that ethics will just sort of go away, I think the philosophers need to pay attention to this because the issues are not going to go away. And even though some may be incorporated into this presumed background condition that Deborah talks about, I think others still need specific attention. And philosophers can bring so much to the debate in terms of policy clarification. For example, just in separating out what are the moral issues versus the social issues, which many people tend to blur over. But there are books now on cyber ethics, which have nothing to do with ethics at all. They're about protocol and etiquette, so on and so forth. So my plea is that philosophers stay in the field and we persist. Okay, I apologize for the snap here. I guess from now on, the moral is go back to overheads.